Good morning. It is a privilege to be here. It's intimidating to come to Austin. I just got to admit it. The Baylor Bears have been beaten up so many years by the burnt orange that we have to live in the shadow of the great Texas Longhorns. And that's not enough. But then I walk into the pastor's office today, and there's Pittsburgh Steelers. What is the deal? I thought Baylor Bears and Dallas Cowboys were just what we did in the South, so it's hard for me to adjust. I appreciate it. Donna, thank you for inviting me through. James, it is a privilege to be here. I want to talk this morning really about how I got here. It's kind of an unusual story of the work that we do, but I think most of you can relate to it. First of all, let me find out, how many of you grew up in the church? You pretty much were a church kid. Probably 3/4 of you. I have a 7-year Sunday school attendance plan. Anybody have more than 7 years of Sunday school? Oh, yes. I grew up in First Baptist Church of Conroe, Texas. It was a dumpy little town back then before the lake was built and Houston became extended down to Conroe. But I was a good church kid. I loved church. I went all the time. I went Sunday night, Wednesday night. Every time the doors were open, I was there. And loved the church. I really disagree with my friends who were partiers and, you know, the tough kids. But I was really one of those kids that just loved the church. Went on to Baylor in 1968, and I did not go there because of the football team. But I went up there and became a youth director about halfway through my Baylor years, and youth directed in a local church for 3 more years in school and then 2 more years full-time, and loved it. I really loved being awake. Now, Waco is unusual in a couple of ways. Number one, we have a lot of poverty. Now, every city has poverty, but what you may not know is that the average rate is about 13%. Austin is about, I think, 13% of your population lives below the poverty line. Waco's poverty rate is double that, 27.6%. And so we have an incredible amount of poor people. And as a youth director, I remember being called one time by an African-American pastor who worked in a part of town called No Man's Land. Now, I had never heard of No Man's Land, but there was this little pocket of poverty in Waco between Belmead, the sub-town next to us, and the main population of Waco that nobody wanted. It was so poor, the infrastructure wasn't ever built, and the crime was bad. And he asked me to bring my youth group over to help his church. By the way, the name of his church was St. Mary's Baptist Church. I didn't know you could have a St. Mary's Baptist Church. It didn't fit in my background. And so we went over and we did this little vacation Bible school. But as we passed out flyers, I'll never forget, the houses were horrible. But this one house had a tree literally going through the front porch. And I thought, my word, let's just go look inside of it. We pushed the door open. And then inside was a man still there, a white man in mostly a black neighborhood, a man named Mr. Sparks, 76-year-old man, completely blind. As we pushed the door open, he was startled. Rats and roaches ran everywhere. The smell was absolutely overwhelming. The floor was so rotted out, I could have jumped through the floor at any one point. Mr. Sparks died about 6 months after that event, but I'll never forget the smell of poverty. How is it that in the richest nation in the world, I thought, that we could have this much poverty right here in the backyard of my own community and not even know it existed? Well, that haunted me. We'd go back each year and work some, but went on to seminary from there and went to Fort Worth to go to Southwestern. And in the morning, we'd sit around and talk theology. I love to do that. I teach some at Baylor University and at Truett Seminary and teach the missions classes there. And I love talking about biblical theology. I believe it's the foundation for a lot of things that we don't sometimes get grounded in. And we'd sit around in the classes in seminary and just soak that in. But in the afternoon, my job was to work in the housing project. My job there in Fort Worth was to go down to Ripley Arnold Housing Project, where the public housing was, and work with the low-income teenagers. Now, remember, I'm a church kid. I grew up protected and didn't know this kind of world existed. But I'd go down in the afternoon and work with kids that were doing crack cocaine, teenagers getting pregnant. Crime was all over the streets. Parents were fighting, and domestic violence was all over the thing. I just had no background for that. And I kept wondering, what is this morning, all this theology that I've learned, have to do with this afternoon? How do these two connect? Now, I'm a 60s kid, and those of you that are about my age, we're the hippie generation, and we used to ask ourselves the big question, well, do we believe this stuff? Is the institutional stuff working? And I remember the long nights of wondering, what has happened to the church? What has happened? When I read the book of Acts, and I look at us today, and I think, what's happened? We've sort of domesticated this incredible organic kingdom of God stuff and made this thing that looks like anything but the book of Acts. And I was frustrated. Well, I graduated from seminary, got married in those years, and my wife and I went to Houston. I had the privilege to work with Dr. Ralph Neighbor. Those of you that know Ralph, he sort of a renegade Baptist. We were working with the unchurched Houston population, doing cell groups, and working with a large number of people that came to be a part of the kingdom because of the outreach approach that we did, and just some great years. But at the end of those years, my wife and I had a two-year-old, but we kind of came to that point in our lives where we said, you know, it's time to see the world. Now, this was not your vacation trip, but we sold our house, made enough money for the sale of the house to buy 2.5 tickets around the world, and we took off. And for the next 4 months, we literally traveled around the world. We hung out among the poor. We worked among some of the most challenging places in the world. Let me tell you what's going on in the world today. Today, while we're here, 27,000 children under the age of 5 will die of hunger-related causes. Today! 27,000 children today and tomorrow and the next day. Now, I read the statistics and they're cold and blank there, but they don't really give you that passion. But now I'm in the middle of that world. Now I'm watching mothers holding those babies that died in the night, and it begins to change the way you look at the world. I sat across the table from Hindus and Muslims and Buddhists and talked about worldviews and how they looked at Jesus, and I began to realize this need. Do you know today there are 10,000 distinct groups of believers, unbelievers that have never had an indigenous church? 10,000 culturally distinct unreached people groups who today do not have one church among them. We begin to meet those folks and begin to hang out. We went down to Calcutta. There's nothing harder than Calcutta. Got the privilege to meet Mother Teresa before she died several years ago, and we were working in the slums and some of the places where the sisters worked with the lepers. We also went into a place called the Home for the Deaf and Dying. These are the mother house, they call it. The place where they bring in 50 men and 50 women in their last hours or days of life. They bring them from the train station. Their bodies are so emaciated, they just kind of bring them in and clean them up, give them a death with dignity. Now, that world was not a world I grew up in. I'm a church kid. I've not seen that world of pain. My wife and I sat down at the end of those 4 or 5 months and said, what are we going to do? What do you do when you've seen the struggles of how does the heart of God must break? What are we going to do about all this? So let's go back to Waco, Texas. Why would you go to that dumpy little town? I mean, been around the world, there were two reasons. Number one, the poverty was there. We came to believe that the Scripture teaches that Jesus incarnated Himself, God in the flesh, and that part of the Christian call is to be in the middle of it. I'll tell you two words that I've learned a lot about these last few years. First word is the word charity. I grew up in a Christian home, and we didn't think about the poor too much until about Thanksgiving. About Thanksgiving, we kind of culturally decided that's the time to do stuff for poor people. And there was this window from Thanksgiving through Christmas that we would do good things. And so we would go and collect cans. You know what I'm talking about. You've done the can collection thing. Here's what I do at my house. We'd go in and they'd say, give us a couple of canned beers. I'd open up the cupboard and I'd say, hominy. Hate hominy. And I'd grab a couple of cans of that which I really didn't want, make sure that I patted myself on the back, saying, aren't I good for helping out poor people. They need clothes too, don't they? Poor people need clothes, so I'd open the closet up. Here's something I can't squeeze into anymore. Here's something really out of style. Here's something torn. Make sure I get my tax right off, give it to the people down at the thrift store, pat myself on the back, saying, aren't I good for helping out those poor people? Can I just tell you that has nothing to do with charity? Nothing. That is simply giving my leftovers away. Things I didn't want. Charity is giving that which I value. The food that I like to eat. The clothes that I like to wear. The time that I really don't have. That's charity. But I grew up in sort of that sacrificial mindset that really wasn't so sacrificial at all. Did you know the average church in America gives less than 0.5% of its budget to the needs of the poor? 0.5% is always for the world that is desperately in need. We live in a world today that half the world makes less than $2 a day. Half of that number makes less than $1 a day. 1.4 billion people living in what we call absolute poverty because they don't have the basic essentials. And the church is giving anything but charity. What is it going to take for the church in America to wake up and realize we have been so blessed by God? We are the richest church in the world. And yet somehow we hoard our resources and forget those 27,000 kids each day. So we begin to segue. Let's go back and say the Western Texas. Let's move into the middle of poverty. We believe that the second word, compassion, is about incarnation. The Latin words for compassion means to suffer with. So here I am in my place of safety and security. I've got a good life. I've been blessed by God. Got a good family. Things are going well. I get up out of my place of safety and security, and I move over here into the middle of the pain. I move into the pain. But we are such pain avoiders as a culture. I don't want to feel pain. I don't want to know about those 27,000 kids. I don't want to know about all those lost folks. I don't want to know about a world that is struggling. It's so much easier to go back to my regular life and forget that. Compassion says you get up and you move in the middle of pain. Janet and I looked around at the city of Waco. We had all the poverty. We said, we're going to buy a house in the middle of this mess. We went over to a place in Waco that used to be the old part of town called North Waco that used to be the rich part of town. Like most cities, we were very segregated by color and by income. Most of the people were African-American in Waco. Most of them lived on the other side of the river. In the late 60s, they began to move across the river in the Civil Rights Movement. The white flight happened to the suburbs. The churches went with them. And the downtowns of most cities ended up being pretty devastated by inner cities and poverty. The Christians might have left, but the black Muslims were there. Others were filling the hole. And so today we're trying to reclaim our cities because the Christians sort of ran away. But we sort of believe that Christianity should push back the darkness, not run away from it. But the call of God is for us to attack that which is dark with the light. And so we began to make some decisions to do that. Well, about halfway through this neighborhood thing, I took a job as a recreation director of a children's home. Now, again, having grown up in the church, I'd never been around kids like this, but here's what happened. I went out to a state home there in Waco, and the first day on the job, trying to find out where the gym was, I was the new recreation guy, I remember asking this child who was talking to a house parent where the gym was. Moki Marino, 6 years old. Moki was getting in trouble for something he'd done. And Moki Marino, that 6 year old, cussed me out. 6 years old. But what is happening here? How can some vile stuff come out of a kid's mouth so young? Well, I went on to the gym, I opened up the doors, kids began to play basketball, and it didn't take long until these two kids, about a foot taller than me, began to play basketball and got mad at each other and started fighting. And they didn't just hit each other in the fist. They picked up chairs and were hitting each other across the head and blood was flowing. It was awful. The whole week was like that. It was the worst week of my life. I've never seen such anger and hurt. Remember the story in the scripture where Jesus is going with the inner circle up to the Mount of Transfiguration? Remember Peter, James, and John going with him, and they go up to the mount, and then they go up on the mountain. There are these two great patriarchs of the faith, Moses and Elijah. Man, it doesn't get better than that. I mean, can you imagine? These guys were overwhelmed. They fall on their faces in the presence of these figures, and they fall down and worship God. Eventually, these apparitions disappear, and Peter, James, and John say, Jesus, let's just stay here. Let's don't go back down. Let's stay up on top of the mountain. You've been there, haven't you? You've been in that retreat, that prayer meeting, that revival, that experience with God where the presence of the Lord was there. You thought, oh, this could just be the way it is all the time. You could just be in the presence of God. Well, Jesus said, no, no, guys, you don't understand. We're going back down. Well, that was bad news. But it got worse. There's two ways to go back to Jerusalem where they were going, the long way and the short way. They wanted to go the long way. Do you know why? Because the short way meant that they had to go through the Samaritan village. Samaritans were hated by Jews. You know that. With the new black-white issue in America, the Jews hated Samaritans, half-breeds, the untouchables. If you touch one in the middle of the marketplace, you'd often go home and take a bath. Jews hated Samaritans. And now Jesus says, guys, we're going through that Samaritan village. They started walking down the road. It didn't take long until Jesus sends them up ahead and says, guys, find out if we can find something to eat, maybe a place to stay. It didn't take long until they're running back down. Listen to the passage. This is in Luke chapter 9, verses 51 through 56. As the time approached for him to be taken up to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. And he sent messengers on ahead who went into a Samaritan village to get things ready for him. But the people there did not welcome him, because he was heading for Jerusalem. When the disciples James and John saw this, they asked, Lord, Do you want us to call down fire from heaven to destroy them? But Jesus turned and rebuked them, and they went to another village. I felt that anger. They had just seen Elijah. Remember Elijah? The man who brought down this fire on the prophets of Baal. Man, they just seen him on the mount. And now these idiot Samaritans had rejected him. Jesus is getting rejected. And the answer for the disciples was, destroy him, Lord. Bring down fire like Elijah did on him. You ever felt that way toward people who you didn't like? I did on that Friday night after that, the stay-at-home experience. I was so mad. That whole week had been such a miserable experience. About, Lord, just bring down fire on this whole place. This is a miserable place. As I walked around the park that night, I went out just to listen and pray. I kind of dumped on God. Lord, I've got a 7-year city skeleton that's been here. Did you forget? Been youth director in 5 years. And here I am out in the middle of this pagan wasteland with kids cussing me out and starting fights. That's not what I bought into, Lord. Now, a lot of times, that's the end of the prayer. We just sort of dump. Fortunately, that night, I had plenty of time on my hand, and I walked around the park and I began to listen. You know, prayer is both ways. You got to listen sometimes. And that night, I began to hear the Holy Spirit of God speak. Jimmy, I have given you the resources of the kingdom. Parents who loved you, not like these kids, rejected by the very people who should have loved them the most. I have given you a church that has led you to the throne, helped you find faith, and discipled you. Give you a college education. I've blessed you in so many ways. Go back and love those kids. Monday morning, I went back. You know what? They still cursed. They still fought. But something began to change in me. I began to realize I'm one of those Christians who didn't get it. Just like the disciples that day when Jesus turned and rebuked them. I was a Pharisee of Pharisees. I'm one of those people who thought because I had Sunday school attendance pins and went to church and didn't curse and get drunk on Friday night that somehow God approved of me. And that wasn't it at all. It was so much more to the kingdom than that. The disciples didn't understand what I didn't understand. That Jesus looked at things a little differently. As we began to look around for a house there in North Waco, we found a huge 4,000 square foot house. You come to my house today, you will not feel sorry for me. We've got a 8 bedrooms. Let me tell you about my neighborhood, though. This used to be the nice place. The doctors and nurses lived here back in the 20s and 30s when the houses were built. By the time we moved in, the poor had moved over. It was an African-American neighborhood. Across the street from the house we bought was a bar called the Chat and Chew. We could watch live and in color what most people had to wait till the 10 o'clock news to see. It was pretty rough little neighborhood. We couldn't afford air conditioning because we didn't have the money for it, and so the windows were open, and it was loud at night, all the stuff going on in the streets. We lived in this big old house, but it had been divided by the landlord into a triplex. These were slumlords that bought these old houses, divided them up, and so on one side there were a couple of mentally ill guys that weren't taking the medication. Upstairs there was a 19-year-old kid who painted the house bizarre colors, but on the other apartment, there was a lady we called the Cat Lady. 40 cats that had not been outside the house in over 2 years. Let me just tell you how bad it smelled. Oh, man. This lady had been let out of the nurse's, I think she was a Marine nurse, and had a mental breakdown. She'd moved into this whole place. Every night she'd take this raw liver and on her little cart, and she'd go through the alleyways, and she would feed the cats from behind the dumpsters, and they'd follow her home, and she'd take care of them. Well, it was out of control by the time we bought the house. So we bought the house for $12,000. Location, location, location. Let me just tell you, it was a rough little start. And can I just tell you, my father-in-law was not too excited about the deal. My wife grew up upper middle class. We already had one child. We have 4 children now. And everything in their past, even as Christians, didn't have any room to understand this. But we believe that Jesus became a man and dwelt among us. That's what the scripture says. He moved in the middle of the pain. I love Eugene Peterson's message. It says, God became a man and moved into the neighborhood. We infest that which is dark. And so this neighborhood was rough, man. It was drug dealers, prostitutes worked our streets. Where the offices of Mission Waco are today was a whole strip shop corner that we eventually took over, but before we got it, this place had been, in the early days, a nice place where the grocery stores and the beauty shops and all that were. But as the poverty got closer and the business community left, we ended up having four bars and a porno theater in that corner. We kept praying, Lord, give us the courage to go down and control that corner. This tough, tough corner in town. God, give us that. And it was about 8 or 9 years later before we finally were able to do that. 6 blocks from my house. And we went down and we bought the bar next to it. I've never bought a bar before. And then we went over to the owner who had this whole strip shopping center. By then it had been green tagged by the city because it was falling below code. And we said, any chance you would sell us this? He said, no, I'll give it to you. He signed it over to us. We took over 6 buildings that were sitting 2 feet deep in water. We didn't have any money, didn't have many volunteers, and we said, you know, somehow, God redeemed this corner. Today, if you come to that corner, just a few blocks down the street, you're going to see a main office, but we started children's programs, job training programs, teen programs. We began to do work with the alcohol and drug addicts in the neighborhood, began to do all those kind of things. And eventually, as our ministry has grown, we have moved to 9 buildings, and that's just sort of the corner where we office. But all of a sudden, people begin to drive by and they say, what are you guys doing here? This is a bad neighborhood. Do you not know that? Yeah, we know it. But we just think that that's what love does. You invade the darkness and you change it. And all of a sudden, we begin to see other Christians join us. They moved into that neighborhood with us. I've been in the same house now for 30 years. Can I just tell you what has happened in that neighborhood? It is transformed. We've still got a long way to go. But it was such an amazing... We built 26 new brick homes in there, but now not because it's gentrified, not because we wanted to pull people out, because we're not like Austin where people are buying out some of these downtown homes. People can live in the suburbs and still get downtown in 5 minutes. We're just simply saying, we're going to bring this new neighborhood back together. And so we've got everything from job training to creating businesses. We believe that the gospel is holistic. God cares about the whole person, physically, mentally, and spiritually. And how do we as Christians begin to make a difference there? Well, we believe that that's what we were supposed to be doing. The second thing we did is we came back to Waco because we were a church town. Waco is a very church town. We got churches everywhere. And we couldn't understand why there were so many churches and so much poverty in the same town, and these two never seemed to get together. Don't you just think God's heart breaks when he sees children that are hungry or haven't heard the gospel? I mean, how can we begin to build these bridges? So we began to do children's clubs. For the last 25 years, we've literally been doing King's Clubs, which are backyard Bible clubs and the projects. Every Saturday morning, we go out all over the city to do backyard Bible clubs. We've got King's Clubs. Let me tell you about my youth director. You would have hired him. This guy is named Gabe Dominguez. Gabe started getting into drugs in high school, dropped out, started selling guns, started selling machine guns, sold some machine guns to the Mexican mafia, and got picked up by the federal authorities and went to prison. God got a hold of that man, as he often does. Today, 11 years after his conversion, he's among the most great youth directors you'll ever have. He's been there. We work with the tough kids. We work with the kids who are in trouble with the law or alternative school, the kids nobody wants. It is amazing. Gabe has been there. He did the gang thing. In fact, the other day we hired his gang leader as another part of our team. By the way, you don't mess with us because we've got people who can take you out. So it's amazing to see the tapestry of God as he begin to pull people down in that neighborhood to begin to see the change. Today, Mission Waco is 20 programs. We do alcohol and drug rehab. We do job training. We do free clinics. We have a homeless shelter. Our ministry is working with the poor and the marginalized. But it's also working with the churches to say, we've got to get up out of the pew. We've got to get out in the middle of the cities that God put us in. Jeremiah 25 talks about God calling us back to the shalom of the city. Seek the shalom of the city, he says, and the prosperity will come to us as well. We believe that God cares about neighborhoods. God cares about brokenness. And so we ask you to join us in that fight. Well, in the middle of all that, we eventually went down to this bridge where there were 5 homeless guys there across the street from Baylor and under the interstate, I-35, and there were these guys sleeping under the bridge. There was no shelter there in Waco at that time, and so we said, let's go down and just hang out with these guys and get to know them. We believe Christianity is very relational. Before you go down and just dump a lot of information on them, you get to know them. And so he said, guys, come on over. Let's go to Taco Cabana and I'll buy you breakfast. Tell me your story. I don't know why you're homeless. Tell me what it means to be on the streets. Got to know the names of those guys. Heard their stories. Some tough stories. But man, I'd have been in the same place they were if I had grown up like that. But they were so engaged with this conversation. They said, hey, come over on Sunday and let's do a Bible study under the bridge. So we brought our five chairs. My wife plays the guitar and sings. And so we sat there with our five homeless guys and we did a little Bible study. And they said, this is fun. Let's do this again next week. Okay. So next week, instead of standing on the corner and said, work for food, they said, come to Bible study. And so some more folks showed up and a few better kids walked across the street and a couple of unchurched community folks began to show up. This morning while I'm here, my congregation of 300 people gathered under the interstate bridge. Black, white, and brown, rich and poor. People who can't spell their name and people working on their PhDs. It is the most amazing group of diversity you'll ever see. Every brand of Christianity, some that don't know Christ at all yet. Let me tell you about our music directors. Josh, you'll appreciate this. Our guy front and center is mentally ill. We believe that we should also work with the mentally ill. I'm not saying y'all do. I'm just saying that's what. And I want to tell you, this guy shows up from an independent living center. His name is Patrick. And Patrick mumbles so fast you can't understand him. And we finally figured out he was saying he wanted to be on the worship team. Well, we have a pretty good little worship team. We live out of Barnum & Bailey. We've got all these trailers and flatbeds and all this stuff. And so we set up our sound truck. And Patrick, we said, you know, we've been pretty lousy in the church reaching the mentally ill. We don't have a place for them. Nor the parents sometimes who are exhausted from taking care of them. So we got to figure this thing out. So we put Patrick back on the back of the stage of the little trailer, put him on the bongos, let him just bang on them. He couldn't hit a note, couldn't sing, but he did that fine for a little while. They knocked the whole set off. And just rolled down the straight steel there. And okay, that's not going to work. So next week, we just let him loose, and he kept knocking everybody's stuff over. He was just moving everywhere. And the third week, we put a little box there and said, Patrick, sing your box. Well, he couldn't do that. That was asking too much. But the fourth week, we figured it out. We bought him an electric guitar. We just don't plug him in. So for the last 3 years, Patrick's played the electric guitar, not knowing he's not plugged in. And he's happy. It will happen. Now, he'll stop in the middle of the song. He'll sign language a little bit. Of course, he doesn't really sign language. Or he'll go up to somebody and take something out of their hand and give it to the person next to him, and they don't understand. So when you visit, you can't say that. This is this man right in front and center. And he's mimicking words because he can't sing. And you're like, this is weird. But you know, Patrick's just as much a part of us as the real thing. Sitting on the front row is a guy named Kenneth. Kenneth is one of my favorite guys. Kenneth is 6'4", formerly homeless, hated his dad, grew up in the forced to go to church, and he eventually ran away at 15 and ran off to the Vietnam War to get out of all that. Got into drugs and alcohol while he was in the war, and came back to Texas, but he was still into the drug thing, and so to keep his habit going, he stole cars. He became part of the largest car theft ring in the state of Texas. Now, we tell churches, every church has assets. You got a nice building here, you got some. You know what I've asked? If you lock your keys in the car at our church, you don't have to call the parking lot people. Kenneth can get in like that. We can take care of that part of it. So Kenneth goes off to prison eventually in Alabama. And he finds a Bible, a New International Version. He'd only read the King James. He always had trouble understanding it. So he grabbed this New International Version of the Bible and started reading it. He read it 3 days straight without going to sleep. Never went. 3 days he read the Bible from cover to cover. Was so overwhelmed by God that he knelt down there by his cell and came to Christ all by himself. 7 years later, he got out and came back to Waco. He did what you're supposed to do when you get out. Find a body of believers. So he walked into a church and they said, sir, you can't come in looking like that. All he had was his dirty jeans and dirty shirt, overgrown beard. And so he went to the next church, and they kicked him out of there, too. Well, he showed up under the bridge. We had a little chair sitting there, and it was early on, and he said, it's okay if I stay? And he said, sure. Well, you just show up in our church. We'll make you a deacon. We don't care. We're just glad you're here. And so got to know Kenneth's story, and it was just incredible. Well, Kenneth loves the Lord like you wouldn't believe. He does most of his money. He gets about $800 on a VA pension and gives away about half of it to those that are in prison to help out. And he's an amazing guy. By the way, we tell the Baylor kids how much smarter he is than they are. Kenneth is brilliant. His mind, his social skills aren't so good, but he's really intelligent. So he goes out to the community college every semester since I've known him. He's 54 years old, and for the last 14 years he's been in college, either taking just some kind of classes. So people ask him, what are you going to major in? He says, don't plan to major. What are you going to finish? I don't plan to finish. And I said, what's the deal? He said, well, I found out that if you ever quit going to school, you've got to pay your loans back. Now, the beta kids don't figure that out. He's a lot smarter than they are. He's not going to ever go back and quit school. He's going to die and get all that taken care of by the government. So Kev isn't so dumb. But Kev is one of those guys that sits out there. So we have this ragtag bunch of folks that are living out the kingdom in a way that is so weird. I've learned more from the poor than I ever learned in the seminary. People who are humble and broken. Over half our church comes out of alcohol and drug addiction. Felons of every kind. They show up every Sunday morning and somebody dumps them off from the county jail or wherever it is. They have nothing, no money, no nothing, no job. And we say, come on, buddy, we can help you. Let's tell you about this Lord who cares about your whole person. Let's help you find a job. Let's get some clothes for you. Let's do what we can to help you. I thank you for this kind of box. You don't understand how important these things are. When you begin to provide just hygiene packs that cost $14 sometimes for people to just be able to brush their teeth and shave. Thank you for caring. And it's that kind of stuff that's where we begin to grab the churches. And today, over 50 churches work with us and the poor in our community. Through the years, we have watched God do some amazing things. It is just amazing. I wish I had time to tell you more stories but of what God has done. A couple of things that are coming up that I want to tell you. One is we're real creative. And maybe because you have to be under a bridge. But on Palm Sunday, we have a great service each year. We wash each other's feet. It's a great time to... Nothing's more powerful than having a homeless person wash your feet. But on the other side of that is we... have communion together, and then we go out with our palm branches, and every year we have one of the homeless guys that dresses up as Jesus, and we put him on a donkey over by IHOP, and he comes across, and we do our palm branches and sing that song by Michael W. Smith, Blessed is He Who Comes in the Name of the Lord. It's a great, fun time of celebrating. Well, about third year, the donkey came across the access road, but then he saw all these people waving these bills and scared him to death. So he wouldn't go, and so he began to move up against the pillar and begin to crush the leg of Jesus, and we didn't know what else to do. So everybody became a donkey expert. We were pushing and blowing his ear and pulling, nothing worked. And so we finally said, okay, we've got some bikers that come to our church too. So we looked up, and sure enough, that morning one of the bikers had a sidecar. So he took Jesus off the donkey and put him on the hog and put him in the sidecar, and he went down the middle of that row with all of us doing our thing, and it was a blessing. And then we figured out, this is who we are. The sense of the humility of Christ. Broken people that understand things that sometimes us Pharisees don't get. You see, when we grow up having all the churchy stuff happen, we forget from the very basics. But when you're around people who are broken, you begin to understand the humility of Jesus. Well, it has been a wonderful journey for us. I've raised four children over there. My oldest son works in the inner city of Philadelphia. My second son is a missionary in India working with an unreached people group. We have a third son who's down in College Station. We call him our missionary to the Aggies. We have a neighborhood child that we adopted when she was three because of a horrible, horrible background. And today she's 18. We'll graduate this year. We've lived in the middle of the city in the pain for a long time. But I want to tell you that what we would receive from that is equally as much as we've given. To be in the middle of this life together. A few years later, we were in Calcutta another time. My wife goes each year. We go each year to India. We also go each year to Haiti. I'll be in Haiti in about 3 weeks from now, working with the poorest of the poor. Average income is about $125 a month. I'm sorry, a year per family. And we do water wells, and we do speak in the churches and have free clinics and all those kind of things. We go to Mexico City every summer. Any of those trips are open, missionwaco.org, if you're interested in going with us anytime. But we have a people group in India called the Gujars. We adopted an unreached people group that are Muslim. There's 2 million of them. There was no Christians among them at all. This is in the northwest India, not too far from Pakistan. And so we adopted this group. The Baylor kids that have come through, we take them on these trips, and eventually God gets a hold of their hearts, and about 8 of them now live among this people group. They're semi-nomadic. They are, know nothing about Christianity. Today, there are 45 believers over our work in the last 20 years. that will be sitting at the table with us at the throne of God. And I can't wait for that. My wife and I have prayed our whole lives that we would have a chance to be a church among the Gujar people before we died. And there is now, so I don't know if our time's about up or if we're still going to get a little longer. But it is so exciting to go over there. So my wife takes that trip. It's about a four-week trip each year. But we also go to Calcutta as a part of that. Well, a few years ago, we were back in Calcutta. And as we walked into a slum that day to work, this one was different than most slums. And I couldn't tell quite what it was. And the greeting is this. They say, Namaste. I salute the divine qualities that I see in you. So we walked in. The man had bandages around his hands. And we kept asking the people, why the bandages? And finally the translator said, didn't I tell you? I said, tell you what? Oh, these are lepers. Leprosy. I had no idea that it even still existed. I thought it had been eradicated years ago. But leprosy is called Hansen's disease. It is not painful at all. It is just the opposite. It's painless. You see, what happens to a leper is they're first kicked out of their society. You can be a high-caste Brahmin and doing pretty well. Now you're out in a beggar slum with hundreds of others. And so they begin to lose their feelings in their fingers and toes. They can't feel. And they begin to hurt themselves because they can't feel. So they'll cook their food on an open fire, and all of a sudden the flesh will get burned because they don't feel the pain. They don't pull back. Or they'll step on a piece of glass and get an infection. Eventually they have to have the leg amputated because they couldn't feel the infection. They never even looked down there. Every night in leper slums, rats will literally eat their toes off and they won't know it till the next morning because they cannot feel. That day as I walked into a leper slum, I cried. I'm one of those males who grew up in a culture of men that said, we're tough. Girls are sissies, they cry, but we're tough. We don't cry for anything. And I prayed, God, let me feel what you must feel. Let me feel the pain that Jesus must have felt as he looked over the hillside and said, Jesus, what? The Son of God, what? God, I hadn't cried for anybody but myself in a long time. They're like sheep without a shepherd. God, break my heart. Let me feel that again. That's why we're here. That day in that leprosy slum, I cried. But you don't realize I had a disease that's much worse than leprosy. I call it spiritual leprosy. I've been around Christianity a lot. I know the Bible verses. I've been to church. But somehow my heart had become hard. There's a word in the Greek called skleros. It's a hardening process that goes on. And Paul talks about it. James talks about it. That even as Christians, we can sit in the middle of our pews and have hard hearts. And I pray, God, break it. Change my heart. And that day in that leper slum, I cried. I remember the song that George Beverly Shea used to sing in the Billy Graham Crusades. I walked today where Jesus walked. You see, what I did with Jesus is I made him in my image. Blue-eyed, blonde, successful. All of a sudden, as I began to read the scriptures over and over, I began to realize Jesus sat at a well with a prostitute. Jesus saw the little guy in the tree and said, Zacchaeus, I'm coming to your house to eat. A tax collector that everybody hated. And as they walked to his house, they said, look at him! He's a friend of sinners! Jesus reached out and touched the lepers and healed them. I realized I knew all the right stuff, but I didn't look like Jesus at all. I didn't know how to follow him into the middle of that world. And as God began to break my heart through those years, it has changed our perception of Christianity. I think sometimes one of the biggest challenges we have is we have a culture of Christianity. Christianity is popular enough. We're assuming we all go to church, that we're good people. But sometimes I think we've forgotten who Jesus is. To get up out of our place of safety and security. You've been blessed. I have been blessed to bless. Abraham's call to make a blessing. You are blessed to bless. Get up out of your place of safety and security and live a life of giving your life away. Sometimes I think the insurance company has more to do with the way we develop our theology than our obedience to the Lord. Risk for the kingdom. Move into middle places where it's dark. Maybe it's just a neighbor across the street you've never met. Maybe it's somebody at work that you think, man, they're a bad-mouthing person. There's no way they're going to listen to me. Maybe it's going across Austin to a place where you've never been and hanging out with poor children and loving them. Or feeding homeless people, going to a shelter. Maybe it's going with us to Haiti or with your church somewhere else. But wherever it is, it's going to make it uncomfortable for you. That's okay. It's okay. It is when you move out, place, you know, out of your place of safety and security that God begins to do His best work in your life. Because you can't control it anymore. He begins to push you out in those places where you're so dependent on Him. Your prayers are so deep. God, help us. You begin to, but we have created this stale form of Christianity sometimes in America. There's enough of us in the United States to change the world. But let me tell you what's happening. Every week in the Western culture, in Europe and America, we lose 5,300 people who walk away from the church and never come back. Christianity in America is dying. The generation behind us doesn't believe it. We can talk about it all we want to, but they are not a church culture like we are. They're not going to walk in the doors of our buildings unless you see something valid. Do they? Do they? When is the last time you cried for your city? When is the last time you cried for your schools as you go to school or your business folks that you work with? When is the last time your heart is broken for those poor children that died today? God, give us tears again. Would you join me as I pray?